Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by an anonymous donor.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Father Narek from St. Sarkis Church with a new episode of the podcast. It is the season of Lent and we are praying with St. Nerses the Gracious. Havado Prostovanim, in faith I confess. Let us start our day with a prayer from the prayers of the Armenian Church. Seer of all, I have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed. Erase the record of my transgressions and write my name in the book of life. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, great sinner that I am. Searcher of secrets, I have sinned against you willingly and unwillingly, knowingly and unknowingly. Grant forgiveness to me, a sinner. For since my birth at the Holy Font, until this day I have sinned before your Godhead with my senses and with all the members of my body. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, great sinner that I am. All-caring Lord, place your holy fear before my eyes as a shield, that they may no longer gaze with lust, before my ears, that they may not enjoy hearing words of evil, before my mouth, that it may utter no falsehood, before my heart, that it may think of no evil, before my hands, that they may do no injustice, before my feet, that they may not walk in the path of iniquity, but so direct their movements that they may at all times be according to your commandments. Have mercy upon your creatures and upon me, great sinner that I am. The Lenten lecture series is continuing here at St. Sarkis Church, and this Friday we will have Harold Hawk from Canada to present his latest book. Now, a couple of months ago, Harold was in Gharapar to present his book in there. His book is called 100, and today I have Harold on the phone with me who will talk to us a little bit more about his book. Harold, welcome back to the podcast.
Yes, I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold. So tell me more about your book.
This book is the fourth book in a series dedicated to Western Armenia and Cilicia, starting with Diyargir, which was published in 1997, Tuyergir, which was published in 2011, and in 2013 I published One Church, One Nation, and in it also we had some images of Western Armenia and Cilicia. And this one is, let's say, the cream of the cream. It's 17 years of continuous work, more than 30 trips to Western Armenia and Cilicia, and the book is 516 pages, and it represents not only the areas where Armenians lived and prospered, and it represents also the richness of our heritage, be it in manuscripts, in costumes, in handicraft, etc.
So why this book is dedicated to the centennial of the genocide? What is so unique about this book that you dedicated for this unique occasion?
My grandparents were from Zeytun and Aybas, and while I was a kid, I didn't understand exactly why I was born in Lebanon and while my grandparents were born somewhere else. And then as I grew up, slowly I learned a little bit of Armenian history at school, but I didn't really understand it either. It was in 1997 that for the first time with the late Archbishop Metrobashian, we went to Western Armenia and Cilicia. That's when it really hit me. And the more I went into these areas, the more I discovered the richness of our heritage and how much we have lost. But dedicating this book to the 100th centennial or to the centennial is not something to cry about. On the other hand, I'm trying to portray our rich heritage. So I'm trying to show in this book that we didn't lose everything, and we still have a long way to build a stronger Armenia. The book, it's rich with Armenian architecture, Armenian costumes, Armenian manuscripts that are photographed in different countries like Lebanon, Armenia, the United States, in Austria, and in Italy. Also the costumes that I photographed at Alma and Vienna also, and in Armenia as well. So what I'm trying to put inside this book is all the heritage, some of the heritage that were saved by Armenians, and they are kept in different museums.
And also, very nice.
And also present-day villages where Armenians used to live, be it in Zeytun or Urfa or Van, Muş, Sasun, etc.
You made your first presentation on this book in Qarabağ. Tell me how it was received and why you chose there to make your first presentation.
Yeah, it was very simple for me because Shushi, for hundreds of years, we have been a nation which lost wars after wars and the genocide which happened 100 years ago. But people forget one fact, that we won the war in Qarabağ, and Shushi was a victorious city. That's where I wanted to present my book. Instead of crying about our loss, I'm trying to celebrate with victory. So that's why I chose to present the book, first of all, in Shushi, Qarabağ.
You're focusing on the resilience of our nation, and that is a beautiful thing. So you were here in the month of December, and your book presentation was very well received. And for that reason, the Saturday School of our church is inviting you, and we're looking forward to have a good crowd participating, listening to your presentation, and learning more about our heritage. What are your expectations on this Friday?
Well, the people who will show up, they will be really proud of being Armenian. Because of this book, you will see that we are very rich, we are very strong, even though we lost so much, let's say 9/10 of the territory. My aim is not to lose hope, on the other hand, is to work towards strengthening our diaspora-Armenia relationship, and also to be proud of what we have saved so far, and to build on it, you know. So I think people will, from different ages, from the young all the way to the older generation, will really appreciate what I'm trying to show in this book. Everybody will really benefit from my presentation of this book.
They absolutely will, because the type of the work that you do, I like to call it a mission, and your mission is very unique. And every Armenian who is proud of their heritage should appreciate the work that you do. So, Harar, we're looking forward to having you with us here on Friday, and we're looking forward to hear and see your presentation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Father Narek, and looking forward as well.
Thank you. Today, we will be speaking with Dr. Arthur Kubikyan, a past Board of Trustees member and an NRA delegate from St. Sarkis Church. Dr. Kubikyan, welcome to the podcast. So before your involvement with St. Sarkis Church, you were part of the Armenian Church and the Armenian community in Romania. Why don't you tell us about that experience?
Well, my father was Armenian Protestant and my mother was Lusav Ochagan, and there was no Armenian Protestant church there, and so there was, I was baptized in the Armenian church. As early as 7 years old, I was holding candles, Momagal, and then Kashots. And then we had a Sargabak Stepan who thought that I should learn Aragetzik. So every morning I used to be in church singing that. And also my job was to do Vochinche Bido, and then I graduated to Taniel Markare.
The scripture readings during Christmas and Easter Eve.
Yes.
Very nice.
And at that time we had Archbishop Vasken, who later became Gatorigos. We used to sit at his feet, and there was a competition who's going to be Momagal, who's going to be using the Kashots. And so that's the initial background. My grandmother, who was Protestant, was very pious, and so she used to read a great deal from the Bible. And also I there was a prayer in the morning, two prayers in the morning, a prayer for every meal, and a prayer before you go to bed. So that's the type of background that I was raised in.
Sounds like a very religious background you had.
Yes.
Tell us about your involvement with St. Sarkis Church.
Well, in 1977, my wife and I came to New York from Washington, where we were working, and in 78, I got involved with the church, and one of the reasons was that Edward Bekian's father-in-law was Deras Orig. And Edward Bekian's parents knew my in-laws, and they said, well, we go to St. Sarkis, and that's how it started. I met here Edward Barsamian, who was a colleague of mine from the Armenian school, and Bedros Jivelekian, everybody knew. So we ended up getting involved with St. Sarkis Church, but because we had very young children, we did not get as involved. But I started this idea of having health fair. So every time we had one of those bazaars at the old church, then we also had a small booth for taking blood pressure and doing little blood tests and so on.
So you also were part of the board of trustees for so many years. And later you were part of the NRA.
Yes.
So you held administrative positions also in our church. Why don't you tell us about that also?
Well, when I got involved specifically because Bedros Jivelekian recruited the groups of us, my wife, I, Aram Kazazian, and Edward Barsamian, and the church was going through very difficult periods. We had a huge mortgage, and we tried to be as helpful as we could to Bedros in fundraising. He was a very dedicated person, and really we owe our involvement to him. His passion and zeal and love of the church was a great example for us.
Very good. Recently you visited Lebanon, and among other things you also visited the Catholicosate of the Great House of Cilicia and had a meeting with His Holiness Aram I.
We were very fortunate that Archbishop Ochagan was there at the same time, and he was very kind enough to have us visit the Veharan and the Tankaran. And also he mentioned that, you know, the Vehapar is not here, but why don't you come 2 days later, because he would be coming back from Armenia. And so thanks to Archbishop Ochagan, we had a half an hour session with Vehapar, who is a very, very charismatic person, and we talked among other things. He was interested what church we're in, and Archbishop Choloyan was very laudatory of our church and our pastor, who happens to be you.
Oh, thank you.
We may even mention the podcast, and the Vehapar remembered you saying that. Well, he said he was really a Vartabet material.
Oh. When you came back from Lebanon, I remember asking you about your impressions, and the first thing that you told me was about the lawsuit that the Catholicosate and His Holiness Aram Vehapar are taking against Turkey.
Yes, this
is something very important, and I would like us to talk about this, because I want our listeners to be educated about the things that are happening in the world concerning the centennial of the Armenian genocide.
Vehapar apparently had gone to Armenia And we had found this in the press because of the 100th anniversary genocide committee meeting in Armenia with the president of Armenia and with representatives from 50 countries. And apparently at that time it was decided, or the president of Armenia mentioned the decision of the Armenian government to formulate the policy of legal claims against the Republic of Turkey. And in that context, of course, Vyapar Haev had told us that a long time before that he had decided, and the governing body of Gatorikosaran, to sue the Republic of Turkey to get back the lands of the Catholicate of Sis. And apparently, within a week, they're filing these papers, and that the Armenian press in Los Angeles mentioned that. I don't know if the local Armenian Weekly or the Mirror Spectator had mentioned them, but he mentioned that, and he also mentioned that in case the case is lost, that they're planning to appeal to the European Court of Human Rights, the same court that right now is handling the Perinçek case.
The Perinçek case is a very interesting case, and a lot of people know that Amal Clooney, the famous lawyer, was talking about Armenians. But I think that we don't know the whole story, and you seem like you know a lot about that. Why don't you tell our listeners a bit about the involvement of Amal Clooney with the Armenian genocide?
Well, Doğu Perinçek is the head of the Workers' Socialist Party in Turkey and also president of the Talat Pasha Committee. And apparently at a symposium in 2009 in Switzerland, he said that the Armenian genocide was a falsehood and a hoax. And at that time, two Armenian activists asked the Swiss government, according to their laws, to bring charges against him. And the Swiss government brought charges against him. And he was indicted, and he lost the case. And ultimately, it was he had to pay a fine, but he appealed it to the European Court of Human Rights. And the lower court of the European Court of Human Rights, in fact, they voted on his behalf, and this takes, of course, several years, on the basis that his freedom of speech was violated. The Swiss government appealed. When the Swiss government appealed, the Republic of Turkey came in as a defendant on the side of this gentleman. And at that time, the Republic of Armenia also had to come in, and the Republic of Armenia was represented, is being represented by the representative of its attorney general, also by Amal Clooney, and also by her boss, who is a well-known human rights lawyer, and his name is Jeffrey Robertson. And right now, a final decision to the higher court of the European Court of Human Rights, the answer should come March 17 or March 18. In the process, however, the lower court had voted on behalf of this Turkish gentleman, but for many of the rationales of the vote, they had mentioned that, well, there was no gas chambers, and there is a questionable whether the extent of the Armenian genocide, whether it should be called a genocide or not. So based on that, Amal Clooney and Jeffrey Robertson defended the Armenian position, going into great details, and this is all available on YouTube if people want to hear it. And they very ably represented us.
So this year is a very important year. We are commemorating the centennial, and it seems like besides commemorative events, we are also taking some bold steps to bring our case in international tribunes. I would like to hear your evaluation, because you seem like a person who is following almost every event. How do you evaluate this? What do you see the future of the Armenian cause going?
Well, as a reaction, perhaps not, but after January 28, papers in Beirut, Lebanon, on January 31st, had articles saying that the state television of Turkey interviewed President Erdogan and asked them about reparations in case Turkey loses its case. And he said that if Turkey is found guilty, he said, we are politicians, we're not historians, we want historians to talk about it and look at the files and so on. And that was his reaction. As a matter of fact, what occurred to me is that from 2000 to 2010, we had 100 historians and experts in these areas, 50 Armenians, 50 Turks, Turkish scholars who met in various universities in the United States and in Austria, and they debated all these points. So what came to my mind is that perhaps these Turkish historians from Turkey and the Armenian historians, maybe they should present him with the result of all this communication that they had. It's been published as a book called A Question of Genocide. Its editors are Ronald Grigor Suni, a famous professor of history from University of Michigan, and a professor of sociology from University of Michigan, Fethmet Göcek, because they went over the whole area again and again and again. Many of the same people, by the way, will be in New York City March 13, 14, 15, when the ARF-ANC is having a symposium on these issues. But I think that since you have the former editor-in-chief of AGOS, Hrant Dink's paper, as a special advisor since October 2014 for Prime Minister Davutoglu of Turkey, I think that that's an inside connection to pass information, to communicate, because ultimately there is a successor responsibility in the Republic of Turkey, even though personally none of the bad people are alive now, and probably they would have been convicted according to Jeffrey Robertson under the International Criminal Court based on the preponderance of evidence against them as to their crimes committed. So this workshop of Armenian Turk and Armenian Turkish scholarship results maybe would help the leadership in Turkey and the connections that over the years there were between the Armenian communities in diaspora and the Turkish government based on those continuous relationships. Maybe they can come to some type of understanding. The key word here that I was mentioned in this workshops was that they had agreement on almost everything. The only agreement they didn't have on was on the word genocide. And so they asked the professor of philosophy, an Armenian from NYU, what should they do? And he said, well, maybe since you all agree on all the causes and the results and the actors and the motivations, and if you don't like the word genocide, just choose another word. But probably, according to Jeffrey Robertson, who's wrote a book on this, Inconvenient Genocide, he said that if the Armenian government sues the Turkish government, it's more than likely we will win, but under crimes of humanity rather than under crimes as genocide. Even though in 1968 there is the Convention on Non-Applicability of the Statute of Limitations on War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity. So my conclusion is that, you know, they have to talk, and the Republic of Armenia probably has to follow Jeffrey Robertson's advice and bite the bullet and just bring it to the world's attention that there was a great injustice done to the Armenian nation.
Dr. Kobikyan, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your wisdom.
Thank you.
Let's do the Bible reading and reflection. This is something that we do every week here on the podcast. Today's reading is from the letter of St. Paul to the Ephesians, chapter 3, verse 14. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth takes its name. I pray that, according to the riches of his glory, he may grant that you may be strengthened in your inner being with power through his Spirit,
and that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith as you are being rooted and grounded in love. I pray that you may have the power to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth, the length, the height, and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, so that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. This is actually a prayer that St. Paul offers to the readers. So we see that in the Christian tradition, it is not uncommon for church leaders to pray for those who are entrusted to their care. And this is a beautiful prayer, and it is rich with theology. Paul invites his readers to reflect on the love of God. He presents the dimensions of that love, telling us that the love of God is long. It covers the length of the days of our lives. He tells us that the love of God has its height, and it's able to cover the heights of the moments of joy that we experience in our lives. And the love of God is deep. It can reach to the deepness of the sorrow and the pain that we may experience in our lives. Therefore, today I pray with the words of St. Paul that we may all come to experience the fullness of the love of God, to live that life and make it the power that leads our lives. Today's hymn is called Luis. This is a hymn that we sing through the sunrise service of our church, which is very common during the Lent season. I hope you will enjoy listening to Luis. I will be back next week with a new episode of the podcast. In the meantime, I would like to thank our anonymous sponsor. I'd like to thank my producer, Greg Dostur, and I pray that the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ will be always in your hearts.
Today's podcast was brought to you by an anonymous donor. We thank you for your support. If you'd like to sponsor future episodes, please contact the St. Saki's Church office at 718-224-2275.